Tiger Zone on Eagle 98.1. Don't miss Ghouls Night Out at LeBerge Baton Rouge Event Center, featuring the $5,000 costume contest and Bag of Donuts Friday, October the 25th. Registration starts at 8, Bag of Donuts on stage at 9. Tickets are $10 or free with a My Choice card, which is also free. Available at all Ticketmaster outlets and sundries, the gift shop inside LeBerge. Halloween's a big deal over at LeBerge. It's a big, big party. Ghouls Night Out on Friday, October the 25th. Back to the phone lines. BC is in Baton Rouge. BC, welcome into the show.
Good evening, guys.
How you doing?
So my question is fairly simple. What is going to be the best way to get some pass rush on this Mississippi State offensive line and quarterback? I know we had to send multiple guys in the second half to get pressure on in the Florida game. But what are some things Dave Aranda can do to get pressure without bringing three or four or five in this particular game against Mississippi State? Thank you.
All right. I'm less concerned about it because this passing game I don't think has nearly the potency that Florida did or that Utah State did. The quarterback, Garrett Schrader, who's been named the starter, the freshman, has been a little bit erratic. He's had his moments. He's more of a runner than a passer at this particular point in his career. I'll be disappointed if LSU's got to do anything exotic at all to put a lot of pressure on that State front.
I think they can play man on it. You can play man coverage and just bring the guys. Every now and then you're going to see a blitz just because you have to do it just to
their twist game, LSU's that is, has been pretty effective. They're pretty good at running those. I don't know, Greg, you might know the exact term, but you know what I'm talking about, where the D tackle flies out into the tackle and then the end is wrapping around. Mississippi State, dead last in the SEC. 18 sacks given up in six games. The only team giving up three sacks per game.
Seven of them against Tennessee last week.
Okay.
And Tennessee, we think, is not good.
You have to be able to get that. LSU should be able to get there with the front.
Man, I ripped on Tennessee so hard last week. We were talking about who's more likely to win, Ole Miss or Tennessee. You said Tennessee. I said Ole Miss. Once again, the lore master, Hanny, takes it home. I don't think you're going to have to. Here's my question. You mentioned playing man, Greg. There's no doubt. Yeah. This LSU team is best when they're in like a cover one, man up, let's get after you. Are they trying? Look, because you obviously can't be super one-dimensional. Like, you can't just do one thing. You got to be able to do both. I almost feel like they're continuously playing the zone, knowing it's not their best, just trying to improve at it. Not all because of Bama, but because you're going to have to play some zone against Alabama and Tua Tagovailoa, and just because you want to improve in that portion of the game.
I think that's probably it. Just doing it. Look, they're good enough against Mississippi State to do it, but there's some things that you want to see in live games, and I think you'll see them do that.
Exactly. Right? You can, especially a game like Mississippi State, yeah. You feel like you can experiment a little bit or work on your weaknesses a little bit.
Yeah. Greg is in Mississippi. Greg, welcome into the show.
Hey, good evening, fellas. Great to talk to you. I like numbers, and I want to see, get your take on, and I answer these questions on numbers. Number of LSU fans that will be in the stands at Mississippi State on Saturday. Numbers on who's got the better chance to survive after the Egg Bowl, Bad Luke or Moorhead. And right now, Mississippi State is probably kicking themselves because Satterfield, that's in Louisville, would have walked to Starkville for $3 million a year. John Cohen, he might be on a little bit of the hot seat. You guys have a great show. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Greg. I don't think either one of those coaches is getting fired after this season. Moorhead in his second year, Luke in his second full year with the interim year. The quarterback, Plumlee, has actually breathed some life into Ole Miss, and I think we all understand the difficulty with which Matt Luke is dealing with. So I don't think either one of them is getting fired this year, regardless of what happens in the Egg Bowl. But State's going to have to hustle to get bowl eligible. There's some 50-50 games here down the stretch, like at Arkansas. You know, that game could go either way. The Egg Bowl, I think, could go either way. The at A&M, I don't think they're going to win there, but I'll give them a puncher's chance there. I don't think they win this weekend or against Alabama, obviously. So that leaves you got to get two out of three of those 50-50 games, and I don't know that they're going to get there.
How did Ole Miss look against Missouri? I didn't end up watching that game. The final score looks respectable.
They got a touchdown late that made it look a little bit better, but not terrible. Okay, first thing is they're still playing hard.
Yeah.
The second thing is the quarterback Plumlee gives them a running dimension that they haven't had,
and that Rich Rod, I would imagine, feels comfortable with.
Yeah, you look at him and he looks like a junior varsity kid. He's small. He doesn't look particularly fast, but he can run. Against Alabama, they ran the quarterback draw, I want to say 8 or 9 times, and this little guy keeps wiggling in between defenders, and he's making yards. He's got, in limited time, almost 500 yards on the ground for the year. So it's like, okay, wait a minute. I see what you're trying to do here, and at least you're still in it. The mood around Starkville right now is that you have screwed this quarterback situation up royally. Yeah.
Absolutely.
1, 2, 3. The first thing you did was you mishandled a Keaton Thompson situation. Then you brought your guy in from Penn State and Tommy Stevens, who was going to be a 1-year guy. And I understand that he's been hurt, but that hasn't worked out. And you've had to force feed Schrader in a situation where it doesn't look like he was ready. And I thought that Keaton Thompson, in the time that he spelled Nick Fitzgerald, showed an awful lot of promise, and he's become the forgotten man. So you, offensive guru from Penn State, have taken a quarterback situation and completely botched it.
Did Thompson stay because he can be a graduate?
He's still
there. But can he be a graduate transfer after this year? Because that would be the only reason why it makes sense to me, is so that he could be immediately eligible next season.
It's as good a theory as any, because they have been mum on the subject since he got out of the transfer portal and came back.
And you have to think he doesn't want to stick around.
After the way they handled him last year with the redshirt situation, I wouldn't want to stay.
Somebody asked me a question that I thought was kind of interesting earlier this week, where they were like, well, when you look at Joe Burrow and you look at, like, Tommy Stevens, like, do you have to be worried about these transfer quarterbacks? Like, is Burrow the exception, not the rule? And to me, the key, if you want to evaluate a transfer quarterback and what you should be expecting out of them, the key is, who did they lose to, right? And Joe Burrow lost to Dwayne Haskins. There's no shame in that. Jalen Hurts lost to Tua Tagovailoa. There's no shame in that. Justin Fields lost to Jake Fromm. There's no shame in that. I don't know who the Penn State quarterback is right now, Hanny.
Well, okay, and I'm blanking on his name. I can see him running. I watched the game with Iowa the other night, and I'm blanking on his name. But the new norm is that probably in the Power 5 conferences in any given year, 40-50% of the starting quarterbacks are going to be transfers. Do you realize that Sean Clifford, thank you. At one point,
thank you, Chuggy D.
Texas A&M had on their team Kyler Murray, who won the Heisman Trophy somewhere else, and was the number one pick in the draft, and Josh Allen, Kyle Allen, excuse me.
Who is currently, saved the Carolina Panthers.
Has saved the season and may end up taking over for Cam Newton. Both those guys were on the A&M team. Neither one of them was starting. Both of them, both of them ended up doing pretty well. Baker Mayfield was a transfer, won the Heisman Trophy. Joe Burrow is a transfer, might win the Heisman Trophy. There's no longer the stigma of a transfer quarterback that there once was. It has become a lot easier to do. You don't have to get the school's permission to go anymore. You don't have to jump through 15 hoops with who the coach is paranoid about losing you to. A lot of these kids are coming in at midterm of their senior year in high school, so they're ahead academically. They can graduate in 3 years the way Burrow did, because
that's really three and a half. If you're really serious about it, and you buckle down, the ability to get out of there in 3 years and have 2 years of eligibility left is huge. And be able to play immediately, obviously.
So the stigma that used to be was, well, if he's transferred, why didn't they want him? And sometimes the answer is there was somebody better than him. Joe Burrow left Ohio State because Dwayne Haskins was in front of him. Haskins was the 15th pick in the draft. That was the third quarterback taken last year. This morning, Mel Kiper and Todd McShay did their quarterback evaluations yesterday, and they now have Joe Burrow as the third-rated quarterback for the 2020 draft. And if he goes where Haskins went, then that means that he's moved himself up from where he was thought to be before the season, up some $7 to $8 million worth of guaranteed money more than what he had before. Baker Mayfield made himself some money. Kyler Murray made himself some money. But it doesn't always work. I thought Shea Patterson at Michigan was going to work better than it has.
That's a great point.
So it doesn't always work, but...
I think the big thing is that these guys have been able to transfer and become immediately eligible. You remember, yeah, Steve Bob, there was a while you transferred and you had to sit out a year and it was a big deal. Now they can get in the transfer portal, they can get out of that, they can go and they can play immediately. So you get someone who's got, you know, some skill but just happened to be behind a guy that's probably better than him, he can come out and go play for someone else. I mean, he can become a free agent.
And to your point, Greg, like Fields got a waiver?
Yeah.
Right? He didn't sit out a year.
Yeah, he did. He got a waiver. And the waiver business, that's been hotly debated about when you should get a waiver and not.
Because the big thing with the waiver thing is there is no set thing that if you check these boxes, you get a waiver.
No. It's all individual.
And I think what the NCAA is running into is anytime they block one of these waivers, there's just really bad public reaction.
No, plus the lawyer, I forget his name, but he's like the specialist in these cases now. And
everyone that you get through then makes it harder. There's a great quote about precedence. I can't remember who said it, but it's like, no matter how narrow the path that a precedent is originally established on, like, eventually, like if it benefits one person to use it, more and more people will use it, and that path will just get wider and wider and wider. And that's exactly what you're seeing in this regard.
Take a break here. The Tiger Zone, we're in studio, but we are brought to you by the LeBerge Baton Rouge Event Center. Ghouls Night Out, the $5,000 costume contest, plus bag of donuts on Friday, October the 25th.
Large.
Back here on the Tiger Zone, Eagle 98.1, brought to you by LeBerge Baton Rouge and Ghouls Night Out on Friday, October the 25th. 499-9898 is the number to call. Brent is in Marksville. Brent, welcome into the show.
Hello.
Hey, Brent, go ahead.
Oh,
Darren
got cut off.
No, you didn't. No, you didn't. All right. Tell him he's not cut off. Okay, he doesn't understand. Yeah. He can't hear. Let's see. Who's the other ones? Troy. Troy in Baton Rouge. We'll see if he can hear. Troy,
hey,
welcome into the show.
Thanks.
Good. What's going on?
Is y'all still there?
Yeah.
He can't hear us.
He can't hear us either.
Hello?
Yeah, yeah.
Tiger Zone question?
Tiger Zone question. Yes, please.
All right, ask Tiger Zone. This is an interesting one, boys. And some more talk. Any concerns about Cade York or just a couple freshman hiccups?
He missed a field goal. I've heard this all week now, and I'm wondering, is he not the first college kicker to miss a 44-yard field goal? I mean, what am I missing here?
Okay, so this is why, if I want to play the opposite side of the coin here. I think that, now first off, yes, let's be clear. His numbers are very good. 7 of 9 on the year. He made the big ones against Texas. He's only missed one extra point. He's had about a million opportunities as well in there. The only thing that gives me a little pause is you have seen the extra points look a little more erratic as of late. And to be clear, we're really nitpicking here. But then if you watch the TV broadcast and you hear Herb Street talking about how he was struggling pulling things left before the game, and then sure enough, when he got that opportunity, he pulled it left. It's just something to keep an eye on going forward. Let's definitely not overreact. Definitely not overreact. But, you know, in a game where it's close, you feel a little less sure now than you did a couple weeks ago? Or do you?
I feel all right, with him. I saw 2 years ago what they went through when it was, hey, just go for it or punt, you know, because...
Hey. Connor Culp made the kicks against Auburn. I don't know how, but he did.
Yeah, and that's great, but... I remember what Ogeron said about him, which is basically, we don't have a kicker. We got to go find a kicker. It's like, ooh, okay.
And then Cole Tracy came into our lives.
Yeah. All right, Troy's going to ask his question. Go ahead, Troy.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing today?
All right.
Listen, kind of a three-stage question right here. With the way the season's going right now, let's just say Alabama and LSU meet up, they're still undefeated. Whichever team wins on both sides of it and go to the SEC championship and meet up with a one-loss Florida or one-loss Georgia, and the winner is either Alabama or LSU on either side, obviously they'll go to the playoffs. My question is, will the loser of that matchup that does not make it to the SEC championship game, will they have a chance to make it into the playoffs on either side, whether it's Alabama and LSU lost the season game, or the vice versa, LSU wins the season game, goes to the SEC, wins it, and goes on, does Bama go? And on the back side of that, I'm curious, let's say if Georgia wins out, gets to the SEC, you play undefeated LSU or Bama in the SEC championship, and Georgia wins, now you have three SEC teams with one loss. I'm curious to get y'all's take on that. Thank you.
So you're counting for four playoff spots here. Clemson can't lose. Clemson can't lose. There's nobody in that putrid conference that has any chance to beat them, and I know North Carolina gave it a shot the other night and had a chance, 2 weeks ago and had a chance. But realistically, I can't see that they're going to lose a game.
Clemson's good for one of those a year, they got out of their system.
Yeah, so that's one. Oklahoma's going to be favored the rest of the way. Honestly, I was rooting pretty hard for Texas on Saturday. Good chance that they'll play them again. Baylor is a tricky out. There's a couple of tricky games for Oklahoma, but they're going to be favored, and they're going to be significant favorites the rest of the way. If they run out, that's two. In the Big Ten, is going to put somebody in the playoff, one way or the other. I thought that Ohio State was the class of the conference going in. I now have to put Wisconsin in that same category. Go ahead.
4 of 6 shutouts for that Wisconsin defense. If you haven't been paying attention this year,
yeah. So you got four. You got four undefeated teams there, but they're in like layers. I think Ohio State was clearly the best, and now I put Wisconsin right there with them. In other words, I think if Wisconsin wins that game in 2 weeks, they can run out. They're good enough too. I don't think that Penn State or Wisconsin is good enough to run out.
No.
Okay, they're both undefeated. They're both having great years, but I don't think either one of them is good enough to run out. I think that that Wisconsin is. So that's three. If Oklahoma, Clemson run the table, you're going to have those two in the playoff with the champion of the Big 12, of the Big Ten, and the SEC.
Yeah,
that's going to be it. Now the question becomes if Oklahoma were to lose a game to Baylor, Texas, or whoever. Iowa State's also a tricky spot for them. And then there's Bedlam. Okay, so there's a chance Oklahoma will lose. I think there's no chance Clemson can lose. That, to me, is what's going to determine whether or not the SEC gets a second team in. And I think of the teams that would hypothetically have one loss, the one that would have the best chance to get in would be LSU, because the one loss would be on the road at Alabama, and that's got to pretty much be your best loss. The second one would be an undefeated Alabama team that lost in the SEC championship game to a one-loss Georgia. That would probably work, too.
I do wonder, though, if you lose in a conference championship game. Now, am I missing a precedent here? Have they put somebody in there that lost in a conference championship?
No, I don't think so.
Because when you lose does factor in. I think if you lose a conference championship, I don't think you should get in.
If you lose a conference championship game, the reason I don't think they put you in, because they want to do something to make their season, the regular season, mean something.
Yes, I would agree.
Not under the new playoff. Now, in the old BCS, Oklahoma lost the championship. In fact, got blown out.
Yeah.
Got blown out
Kansas
by Kansas State.
Darren Sproles.
And they got in anyway.
So I guess, in my mind, maybe the path that I see to getting a second SEC team in, and I'm going to do something that I really am reticent to do. In fact, I hate it. I'm going to give credit to Matt Moscone. He said this on Saturday. He said that Texas losing may not actually be the worst thing, because it gives Texas a second loss. And if they went out, and then if Texas and Oklahoma square up in a Big 12 championship, and Texas were to avenge that loss, that would essentially eliminate the Big 12, because a two-loss Texas wouldn't get in, and then a conference championship loser, would not get in because of when you lost. And so that's a potential pathway. Okay, I'm done.
Yeah, I can see the Big 12 not getting a representative at the hands of the SEC getting two. What I can't see is the Big 10 missing out altogether, and I can't see Clemson losing. So, therefore, I can't see the ACC getting left out altogether. Yeah. You basically, and the SEC champion's getting in. So,
so it's a Big 12. Like that would be the hope.
Pretty much.
Or how about this? Just go win them all, boys.
Yeah, you win them all.
And to be clear, look, let's before we even start looking at Alabama, I'm not at all worried about Mississippi State. And we can discuss whether or not it's a trap game because a lot of people have asked us that. But Auburn's still going to be tough. Like, Auburn is not a look ahead. You cannot just come in and take Auburn lightly. Yeah, it's a great defense.
JB in Jeb in Knoxville. Jeb, welcome to the show.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. No, you're gonna have to tell him to answer.
So how about this? Let's do this then. Let's explore that because somebody said y'all have said it's a trap game week for Tiger Zone. Y'all have barely talked about Mississippi State. Is this weekend a trap game?
No,
it's a sandwich game, but I don't consider it a trap game because I don't think LSU can lose. Because,
well, the problem with it is that you're right. Mississippi State can't really threaten them.
You know, if they were playing somebody that was, you know, a little bit more dangerous.
That's true. Like, who's the superstar?
Yeah. Well, how do they threaten you?
How in the hell would a potential loss
come
about?
If they're playing Missouri this week, I'd be like, okay.
Yeah.
You know, that's one that you could overlook. Oh, they lost to Wyoming. Hang on. They lost since, okay? That's one of those games that would really scare me.
I watched Mississippi State play the first game of the season against UL down in New Orleans. Right. And let me tell you, I mean, UL almost beat them and probably should have. Mississippi State, I mean, they showed flashes, but they have no real threat. There isn't anybody that scares you.
I would also say this. Again, talking to people Monday when I was touring that building with Branch, they remember 2 years ago. They have not forgotten getting just demolished in that stadium. They have not forgotten 50,000 cowbells going crazy, the loudspeakers. Coach O said in his press conference on Monday how he did not prepare the team adequately for the crowd noise. So I think when you have that tangible revenge factor, like this is not like the Mississippi State team that you beat 18 times in a row where maybe you're like just, it's Mississippi State. No. You suffered at their hands badly 2 years ago, and I think they think this is a great opportunity to avenge that suffering.
Take a break. This is the Tiger Zone on Eagle 98.1. Back here on the Tiger Zone, brought to you by Ghouls Night Out at L'Auberge Baton Rouge on Friday, October the 25th, featuring the $5,000 costume contest and bag of donuts. Tickets available now with a My Choice card. They are free, or you can buy them at Ticketmaster for $10. Registration starts at 8. Bag of donuts takes the stage at 9. We had a question off the air about the younger players that could aid in on the pass rush. So, T-Bob, this gives us an opportunity to talk about where you think they're going to use Marcel Brooks moving forward.
I mean, that's it, right? It's third down situations. Put him on the end. Don't give him any responsibility save for have a pass rush plan in your mind and go and execute that plan to get to the quarterback however you can. And if you think back to the Texas game, he's going to play hard. Like, he's going to play with a motor that's just not going to stop. So he's the obvious answer there. He asked about recruiting as well. I don't really know, to be honest.
You know, this weekend you're going to road. He asked who was coming in. So you got, I'm assuming, talking about the Auburn game. We'll know more next week about that. I know they had three official visits this past weekend.
Shea Dixon, okay, I misunderstood the question. I thought he was talking about actual like pass rush recruits. If he's talking about overall numbers, Shea Dixon did say that the guest list was over 100 people last week, which is absurd. And then you had the Ogeron quote Monday where he said, you know, it just shows how busy a coach is, right, and the CEO that a coach is. But 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Sunday, he's meeting with recruits and their families. And so I imagine the Auburn game is going to be another primetime atmosphere, CBS 2:30. So I think you'll probably see a similar list to Florida. How about those Florida ratings? I mean, right, is that not, you talked about validation to start the show. Is that not validation of how we framed this game? Was it 6.5 million on average, 7.5 million overall?
It was.
Or at its peak?
The numbers that the New Orleans market has put up for both college football games, the big games for LSU, and the Saints games have dwarfed any other market.
Yeah.
I mean, by wide margins, you know, and I would have thought that there are more people in Dallas watching the Cowboys than there were people in New Orleans watching the Saints. But it's not it's not the or more people in New York watching the Giants or Chicago watching the Bears, but the numbers don't suggest that. The numbers suggest that New Orleans has been the top football market by a significant margin, and a big part of this LSU-Florida bulk rating came out of that market.
Really?
Yeah, so...
Charlie, you watched the Giants or the Jets play lately?
that's a really strong point.
This past weekend, the Jets played the Cowboys.
Yeah, wasn't it? So I think it was the highest-rated college football game in the last 2 years for ESPN, and then it was some crazy, like the highest in October in, I don't know, like 20 years or something.
And there's
25 years.
And there's been been questions about LSU-Alabama, and is that going to be a primetime game? And the answer is... that it will not be a primetime game on CBS unless CBS buys the time slot from ESPN, which they did in 2011.
If it's one versus two, I think they
don't.
I hope they don't. You know why?
Why?
I don't want Alabama to be able to use their LED lights. I love that they're so salty that they have to keep playing during the day. I'm that petty. I want it to be in the afternoon just so Greg Byrne will complain more.
ESPN could. They could say no.
Yeah.
They could say no. Last time CBS bought it, I think if we get two more weeks down the road and everybody's 8-0 and it's going to be one versus two, then you're going to see CBS pull out the checkbook.
But I mean, that's a great situation for ESPN, right? You go into those negotiations just kind of cracking your knuckles like, all right, what's
what
you got for me? Yes, exactly.
Right.
All right, so you said trap game, sandwich game. You don't consider it that either.
No, just because, as you all said, they're terrible. And I think they're locked in.
I think you could have a hangover. And LSU still wins, but I think it's not the sharpness could be gone.
So do you think they cover the 18?
Yes.
Yeah, I do too.
Gordy brought up an interesting point. He said that the fans there have turned on Moorhead a little bit. If you heard him on the media availability today, he was talking about how his daughter was crying because she had heard all of the chants at him as he's coming off the field, and they have the honeymoon's over, big if there ever was one in the first place. So with that in mind, stadium could be dead. Or it could be dead after a very short period
of
time.
It's not going to be as alive as it was last time you went there.
Gordy said, hey, it's a lot easier to sleepwalk through these things if there's nobody. If there's nobody in the stands, if they really are as down on the team as it appears that they are. Now, Ogeron thinks that, hey, they get up for one game a year, and that game's going to be this one. So we'll see. But what Gordy said was, I'd rather have them. I'd rather have them ringing the bells and blaring the music and the student section be on fire, because then I know my guys are going to be into it. They walk in there and the students
you're not wrong.
And they're not into it.
It's hard to get up in some of those games.
Then maybe you say, that's why everybody that goes to Vanderbilt at 11 o'clock in the morning, it's the middle of the second quarter, usually, not this time with LSU, but usually in the middle of the second quarter, it's like, all right, I've had my second cup of coffee. I'm good now. Okay, but before that, forget it.
How about this? So we were talking about ratings. New Orleans, number one market for that game, 30.6 local rating. Do you know who number two was? And it's by a wide margin. Like, these are the only two that – it was the only one close to New Orleans. Birmingham. So you know who else is watching. Birmingham with a 27 rating. And then Jacksonville randomly third on the list.
Okay. All right.
Well, no, I guess not randomly, obviously, Florida. But still, whatever. Birmingham. So the Crimson Emperor's spies are watching, Hanny.
Big brothers everywhere.
Could make an appearance this week. We'll take a break. Go come back, take a look at what's going on in the SEC elsewhere this weekend. This is Eagle 98.1 Tiger Zone. Back here on the Tiger Zone, Eagle 98.1. This week in the SEC, we've got seven games are conference games against conference teams. Nobody out of conference. Nobody's off this week. So the plate is full. Early games, Florida and South Carolina. I watching all of South Carolina and Georgia, I didn't feel like there was anything flukish about that game. I thought South Carolina outplayed them. And I know they got some turnovers and everything. It was a sloppily played game at times with penalties and stuff, but I thought South Carolina outplayed them.
No, to your point, Handy, just look at how the overtimes went down, where when South Carolina misses that easy game-winning kick after the pick, you're like, okay, well, it's got to be over. Now, that's a backbreaker. And yet, in that next overtime, South Carolina got to the one-yard line. Like, they got right up against the end zone before they were finally stopped having a field goal. Georgia didn't gain a yard. Didn't gain a single yard. And you know I am very reticent to give Will Muschamp credit, but...
Take Florida.
Credit where credit's due.
So South Carolina coming off that big win. Florida coming off this back-to-back physical game. This is a tough spot for both of these teams. Florida's had Auburn and LSU back-to-back. South Carolina's coming off this big emotional win. It's a tough game to forecast for a minute.
I'm with you, Greg.
I think Florida's better. Let's keep it simple, right?
They're just better.
I'm biased, but Florida's got the better defense.
Better defense.
They got a better quarterback.
Very impressive Trask.
They got a better coach for sure.
Is South Carolina still going to be third string quarterback? Because Helinski looked like he was pretty hurt last week. I don't know. Yeah. And then South Carolina probably feels a bit like they've arrived. Like they can rest on this Georgia win for a while, whereas Florida's hungry to prove that they are better than what they showed.
Auburn has had a week off to think about the loss to Florida. They go to Arkansas, who's been absolutely dreadful all season. So somebody asked, how did LSU and Mississippi State get in 2:30 slot? It's like, well, look at some of the other options. Yeah. Okay, Missouri's a three-touchdown favorite. Auburn's a near three-touchdown favorite. Georgia's better than a three-touchdown favorite. Alabama is a 5-touchdown favorite because that game absolutely has to be played. Ole Miss and Texas A&M doesn't have a ranked team, and LSU's sitting there at about an 18.5, 19-point favorite. So take your pick. Anyway, Auburn and Arkansas. It's not really we think who's going to win. It's how does Auburn bounce back?
Well, I think they do. I think they really bounce back. That one's going to be so bad. Don't let the kids watch.
I will say this for Arkansas. I mean, they're not going to win this game, but at least they played their last two ones close. They pushed A&M to the limits. The Kentucky game was close. So.
All right, Mizzou and Vandy. Mizzou lost the opener to Wyoming, haven't lost since, and they're a big, big favorite here. Listen, we think that Georgia's the best team in the East or Florida is the best team in the East. Leading the East, Missouri. Yeah, it's early.
How about it?
Kelly Bryant, big year.
Worst thing for Missouri is that Georgia got beat, and so now they lost one. They're gonna roll, I think.
Georgia, you want to talk about take out their frustrations on Kentucky? That one's gonna be A&M Ole Miss. You got a fair fight here at Ole Miss.
I mean, surely. I mean, I feel like I've been loving on Ole Miss all year long. But surely A&M hasn't fallen so far. But then again, they did get into a dogfight with Arkansas. And Arkansas ain't any good. So
A&M better watch out here.
My heart is with Ole Miss here.
I like Plumlee.
How about this?
Giving them a little bit
of... The party decks. They're at Ole Miss. They're in Oxford. Ever since they've installed the party decks, the home field advantage has gone through the roof.
You think that's it? You think that's what it is?
It's a party decks, absolutely. Okay. Then did you see them? They're just tents in the stands. It's genius.
And Tennessee and Alabama is a late game on ESPN. You know what? I may do something that I rarely do. I may root for Alabama to win this game by 75 points. And I'm going to tell you why. Because there's finally been some discussion about the ridiculousness of the SEC schedule. This game has been at the forefront of every discussion of redoing the schedules that we've ever had. So in a year where the discussion finally gets to the table, take the game that has prevented it, the number one game has prevented it for so long, and turn it into the mockery
make
that
it
is.
Oh, yeah,
make it a joke.
I love it.
Third Saturday in October. Love it.
All right. T-Bob, you guys are back normal time 5 hours before the game.
9:30 a.m.
For pregame. Thanks to everybody for participating. Again, don't forget about Ghouls Night Out over at LaBerge on October the 25th, featuring Bag of Donuts and the $5,000 costume contest. For T-Bob, for Greg, for Chuck back in the studio, which is where we are now, I'm Charles Haniger saying thank you and good night, everybody. It's been the Tiger Zone on Eagle 98.1.